Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
It's hot weather.
I know.
It's horrible.
I don't want to complain about it because I complained about it too much, but I will mention it again because in hot weather, the damn cormorants at work, they stink so bad.
Yeah.
I took a photo. I keep meaning to send them to you. I've got photos and video. Like, anybody else would like, whoa, that's a lot of cormorants.
Right?
And I got to work the other morning, and it had just freshly rained. And so you think to yourself, oh, I love the smell of fresh rain. No, you don't.
The rain you do, but not what's causing it.
The freshly moistened cormorant crap dripping from the trees.
Smells of summer.
I always have to take a different walk into work because I can't take the walkway because the cormorants are above the walkway. So
if you gotta get like an umbrella and start singing and dancing as you're walking just to see if people notice.
Singing in the poo.
Yeah. It's been hot lately.
It has. It's
been really hot.
It has been really different.
As much as we love paddling, I'm beginning to think maybe I should have just taken up swimming.
Well, I've been in whatever parks in the last few decades, and like I don't mind the hot weather when you're out paddling. It's mm-hmm. like, well, you just paddle a little bit slower, or you move around camp a little bit slower. Portages, they suck in high temps.
That's an insult to things that suck. Yeah, it's brutal when you're weighed down with packs and gear and slogging. Because especially if it's a thick forest, it holds that heat and humidity.
Yes, the humidity just bakes in.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
And it seems to create a bumper crop of mosquitoes and black flies. And anyway, I don't want to complain.
I remember taking Tracy on one of her first canoe trips.
Oh.
And it was hot. And when we came out of the forest at the last end of the last portage, she goes, is this the last portage? I said, yep, nothing but paddling from here. Good, because I am tired of this expletive.
I've had enough
of this. But even I was just like, oh man, just the heat and humidity that was just being held in.
It's oppressive.
In the trees.
And and the portage pack or whatever you've got on your back, it's like the heat that builds up at your kidneys with the backpack. It's like, oh, man, you're trying to jam a fist in there to create some airspace. And
yeah. Yep. And the soggy underwear, because that's where all the sweat goes right down your back.
It's all running downhill.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we had a little discussion.
Oh, did we?
About Killarney.
Are we going to talk?
No, Kildare.
Kildare's
tree, famous tree.
So
preface this beforehand. When I think of a windswept tree, I'm thinking of the Jack Pine by Tom Thompson.
Yep.
I'm not thinking of Kildare Provincial Park.
Yeah.
However.
However, so I didn't know that I'd be allowed to talk about it, or else I would have had the story open in front of me. But there is a Instagram famous or photo famous. Everybody wants to go take a picture of this windswept tree in Kildare Provincial Park. And it's just become photo famous. Everybody wants to get an Instagram shot of it and whatever. It looks pretty amazing. It leans way over, and it's got all the windswept qualities of a really amazing photo shot.
Mm-hmm.
And but unfortunately, the tree is feeling its age, I guess. So it's they've noticed that there's a bit more sag in the last 2 years. And so they had park staff go and take a look at it. And so it's starting to rot from the inside out. So it's having trouble holding its own weight. So they've propped it up. And so it's not so photogenic anymore with its crutch. And so there is a company. and I'm sorry I don't have the story in front of me, but the company, some they have a they, you know, they grow trees and stuff. And that's my explanation.
They grow trees and stuff. those people that grow the tree things.
So this company has gone above and beyond. Now, I'm thinking, I'm the positive type of person, so I'm thinking, this is fantastic. Sure, it's going to be different, but they took cuttings and seedlings from this tree and grafted them onto other trees, and so it'll be, for the most part, it'll be the same genetically, the same tree. Of course, it's not going to be the windswept one, but genetically, this famous tree will live on. I thought that was fantastic, and I saw that. I shared it with Alan too, and Alan gave it a heart. He's like, oh, he liked it too, and of course Sean didn't like it. It's not the same tree.
Forest Gene Conservation Association.
There you go.
Yeah, they made 30 clones of
clones.
The tree.
Yep.
Okay, it's fancy dancy tree that everybody liked, but. Now you got 30 trees elsewhere that don't look anything like it. I don't the see the...
Here come the clones.
Yeah.
What is it? Do robots dream of electric sheep?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's the name of that movie? That was the original title.
I don't know what the actual movie's name was. I've just heard that.
Well, the original book, the original movie was Do Robots Dream of Electric Sheep? And it's... Gosh,
nerd.
Gosh darn it.
You're just going to... Well, anyway, we're just going to...
We're going to Google it while we're talking. Anyways, I think it's great that there's going to be these 30 seedlings. They plan... They've grafted them already. They're in pots and they're in their greenhouse.
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner, that's it.
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. That was the original title.
Yeah.
Anyways...
I just don't see the, like I say, it's, why not just make 30 new trees?
I thought this was fantastic because you're taking the genetic of that tree. You're keeping that tree. So, if, I don't know.
Well, you could just make seedlings from the tree.
Well, you know, for people who have emotions, it's a fantastic thing.
Losers! I
think it's awesome. I don't know where they're going to plant them.
I think it's cool that they're making new trees.
Yeah.
But I think everybody's just thinking, oh, it's that tree. Yeah, but it looks nothing like that tree. It's not in the same location.
It's not
going to
have the same memories.
It's not going to have the same windswept look. It's not... Look, it's a human. No, but that's Fred. That one's George. You like the George. You've never seen the Fred, even though Fred is George's son.
They don't have the same memories. Anyway, I thought it was kind of cool that they are keeping the genetic or origin of the tree, making 30 new ones, and they're going to plant them late summer or fall this year. 2026, I think they said.
That'd be next year.
Yeah. So late summer, early fall of 2026, they're going to go back up to Kilbear and plant this genetic duplicate somewhere.
Now, what were you saying about you can't make something of it or something? And I said, well, if you were to cut it down and make a chair, it'd still be there.
It'll live forever in the chair.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's going to be gone. Well, not if you cut it down now and make a chair. You know what? Each into their own. This is just one of those things that I'm looking at. Like, so just plant new trees.
I guess I'm just romantic at heart.
Tree lover.
I don't know that I've ever hugged a tree.
Really?
I'm sure I have, but not hugging, but I don't know. I'm not a tree hugger. Damn it.
Have you ever touched a tree?
Oh, I touched lots of trees.
So you're right.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. Tree fondler.
I saw too late where you're going with that.
You saw too late. You ran into that like a brick wall.
Anyways, I thought it was cool. I thought it was interesting.
You know, it's cool that they're actually taking the clippings and all that sort of stuff and making new tree, but okay.
Well, okay, so now this is more of the scientific part, but there is a deep valley in Australia, and it was only discovered, I think, 10 years ago. There was a big forest fire, and when they went in to douse the fire, this wildfire started by lightning, whatever. Anyways, to get into this valley to, and the valley was protected because it was a very, very humid valley. The cliff tops burned. And so when they went to investigate the fire and put out the remnants, they discovered a million year old tree forest still living. Like these things, these trees had only ever been seen as fossils, tree okay. fossils. So they discover them, and this valley somehow has been protected over a millennia in Australia. And so these, it's like a really weird, weird looking tree, but it's like millions of years old, and it's managed to survive in this valley, this gorge type thing. So anyways, they, I don't know, I'd like to get a cutting of one of those.
Mm-hmm. That's a bit different, though. So in the valley, was there a bog? And in that bog, is there a log?
In the bog, in the barrio. Rattlin' bog.
Who's the chef that went around the world everywhere?
Oh, yes. I liked his Japanese episodes. His Japan episodes.
Totally drawing a blank on his name now.
Yeah.
We are getting old.
I know.
Anyway, so him and another guy found these old, almost extinct cocoa trees, this one strain, and they brought them back and planted and ended up with a big orchard.
Anthony Bourdain.
Anthony Bourdain. And when they got enough of these cocoa trees, they harvested them and made chocolate.
Oh, cool.
And they made chocolate bars at like $36 each. So I bought three.
Did you?
I did.
Oh, wow.
I did. Well, I ended up selling one to a buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so because he wanted to try it. It's not a chocolate bar like you just mow down. It's like you take one square today and you, yeah, that chocolate bar is going to last you a couple of weeks,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I bought two of them and it was really good chocolate. Hmm. It cool. really was. And
that's
I've had chocolate from all over the world.
Yeah.
I have chocolate mules that bring me chocolate from different places. I had a buddy that went to Barcelona.
Yeah.
And I said, dude, there's this chocolate shop you have to go to and buy me. And I listed. One of the guys I work with, his wife is from Bolivia.
Yeah.
So they went back to Bolivia. And I said, okay, where you're going? About 10 kilometers away, there's a co-op. So all the farmers get together and it's their co-op. And they make and sell chocolate.
Yeah.
And get me one of these, get me one of these, get me. So I had all this handmade
yeah.
chocolate brought up from Bolivia.
That reminds me, I was your cheese mule.
And you were my cheese mule.
Wow, while you're in Nova Scotia, there's See? This family cheese place.
Right?
Apparently the
I have food mules.
So I brought you back some
Dragon's Breath blue cheese
and some Goudas.
Some smoked Gouda.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I got these. But yeah, Anthony Bourdain did that with that one cocoa tree.
Yeah.
That was going extinct or mm-hmm. they thought was extinct or something. They yeah. found some and they expanded it and grew it and kept it going until they had a big
yeah,
plantation, I guess. Yeah.
yeah.
And that's what they did with this. They made chocolate.
Very
and
cool.
It was expensive, but it was so good.
Mm-hmm.
And people are looking at me, what do you mean $36 for a chocolate bar? If you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah, it just reminds me of the growing up, you'd get at Easter, you get the chocolate bunny, and the chocolate bunny is like hard as rock, and it's like 70-80% paraffin wax, mm-hmm. not really much chocolate in it.
But you know what? That cheap-ass chocolate,
yeah,
really, you eat that stuff, and then when you get some really good stuff,
you really
appreciate that good chocolate.
It's like
it's like eating a drink and some... Live
your life on Tim Hortons coffee, and then you go to a specialty coffee shop. It's like, oh, is this what it's supposed to taste like?
And then you get some of that civet coffee.
Oh.
That's the stuff the civet eats and then poops out?
Yeah, the guys at work, they've been every time somebody goes on vacation, they'll come back with some coffee from some country, some Portugal coffee, or one of the guys got some civet coffee. And so it's for the past 6 months, it's been this big coffee sampling smorgasbord at work.
Trace and I had a friend that worked on a cruise ship, and they went down to Brazil
yeah.
and Colombia. and they hit some coffee plantations, and she knows I love my coffee. So in the mail, I get this package. It looked like something you see on a movie that the cocaine dealers have. It's that exact size.
It's a brick.
And it's from South America. And I'm thinking, well, hello, friends. No, it was a bag of coffee, freshly picked, roasted, bagged, and mailed.
We've been looking at coffee roasters at work lately. It's like, oh. So, and somebody said, hey, where do you get green coffee? And I just, oh, the Green Coffee Company. It's like, what? You know about this? Well, yeah, it's downtown Toronto. They make the, you can buy just the green coffee, and then you can roast it yourself. And anyways, so
Derek knows too much. We must have him killed.
Because I was going to buy myself a coffee roaster.
Yeah. No, that's too much work for me. I'll do the grinding and all that sort of. But when I've got to start roasting it now, by the time I'm done and the coffee's there, I'm already at lunchtime.
Yeah.
Would you like a cup of coffee? No.
No. I'm not going to wait 45 minutes.
Yeah. Forget it, pal. Anyway, so we're in August almost.
We are almost
one
there.
Day mm-hmm. out of August.
Yeah.
And I use the term August water.
Okay.
It seems when it's really hot summer.
I had an uncle named August.
August Water?
No, August.
What was his last name?
Specht.
August Specht. Odd pair?
German.
German. Anyway. So, August, when it's hot summers, we get August water, I call it. Because you start drinking the water from your tap, even though it's cold water, and it's got that taste to it.
Yes.
Like an earthy blech taste to it. So you got to filter it out or put in the Brita filter or something or just deal with it.
Yeah.
Drink from the fountain, drink from the hose.
Because the people who process water for cities can only do so much.
Well, and I've talked to them about it because we had this taste in our sink and I thought, well, I've just done some work on the pipes or something. And he goes, no, we're still getting the, they do all the testing every single day and all that sort of stuff. And there's nothing in the water right now. So, so August water's coming up. And one of the things is we came across a story here and it's not only here, but this is sort of a where things can go.
Exactly.
So toxic algae once again clouds the water of Nicola Lake. Regional and provincial leaders met with residents addressing the growing fears over water safety, environmental health, and community response.
Now, this, anybody who camps in Algonquin will be familiar with, what's the lake?
They had a couple lakes closed down because
closed
of
down
algae blooms.
For like 5 or 6 years because of algae blooms.
Yeah, every year.
And I've canoed through it, and it's there's a layer
You're allowed to canoe through.
You cannot camp.
Cannot camp. Stay. You cannot stay there. You cannot drink it.
Yeah.
Nothing.
And boiling doesn't help.
No. So out in BC, the Nicola Lake there, meeting held by Lakeshore brought together TNRD directors David Laird, Herb Graham, Fraser, Nicola, Tony Luck, Merritt Mayor Mike Getz, Upper Nicola Band Counselor Brian Holmes, and almost 100 members of the public to discuss the growing threat of toxic blue-green algae bloom in Nicola Lake, recurring issue that has intensified this summer. And this summer here has been extremely hot.
Yes.
Last couple weeks, Castanet Kamloops reported that a 7-month-old puppy fell ill and died less than half an hour after being in the water.
And so that just kind of gives you an idea of
what this bloom can do.
Yeah.
Kristen Odd, who owns a summer home at the Merritt Lake area lake, said her English Springer Spaniel puppy became fatally ill after being in the water. According to her, the dog seemed disoriented and was vomiting and defecating. She added that she scooped a jelly-like bile substance out of its mouth while getting him in the shower to wash him off and right after rushed him to a veterinarian in Merritt, but it was too late. He died right then and there. I'm still in shock. I actually have never seen anything like this, she says. The community keeps looking for answers after hearing several dogs became critically ill after being at the lake the last couple weeks, with residents saying another dog has died since. So dogs are getting very ill. Dogs are dying.
Well, dogs don't know not to drink the water, right? Humans will go, oh, I'm not drinking that. But dogs will drink from mud.
Well, you got to think of the other animals that are drinking it, too.
Yeah, that's true. Right? Like bears and
so how many of these animals have wandered out into the woods? And
yeah. There's like raccoons dead in the woods. And
Nicola Lake sits at the heart of the Nicola Valley, a basin long known for its ecological diversity and cultural importance. Fed by the Nicola River and several smaller tributaries, the lake is historically supported fish populations, migratory birds, and agriculture. Also plays a central role in the lives of the Upper Nicola Band and the broader Silix Okanagan Nation, who have stewarded the watershed for generations. Over the past century, the watershed has experienced significant change, including land clearing, ranching, irrigation demands, recreational use, population growth. These pressures have altered flow patterns and increased nutrient loading, which scientists now identify as major factors behind recurring algae blooms.
And that's the key thing. And everybody is told, you know, hey, careful what soaps you take with you camping and use biodegradable soaps. And biodegradable soaps are meant to biodegrade in earth, not in a lake. And so but everybody goes, well, I'm just a camper. Well, if there's thousands of campers, this stuff gets into the waterways. And now that's a small part of the problem. A larger part of the problem would be runoff. Mm-hmm. Runoff from like farming. And so when you're pouring all these phosphates and stuff onto land to help crops grow, when you do that, rain runoff is going to make that go into bodies of water. And that's the problem. That's one of the major sources, maybe not the biggest source, but like industry also. It's like when you have these nutrients, excessive nutrients flowing into waterways, it will create a toxic algae bloom.
These pressures have altered flow patterns, like increased nutrient loading, like all this stuff, like you say, from the groundwater in the groundwater, the stuff that's coming off.
Runoff from streets. Runoffs and that,
it's all going in there.
Yeah.
We've impacted this community with people living in it, and you can see the results, David Laird, TNRD director, says. Brian Holmes, counselor for the Upper Nicola Band, echoed Laird's opinion, noting that while cattle in the stream is an issue and always has been, it isn't the only issue. And, of course, everybody wants to blame the cows or the farmers doing
the cows
something.
Are pooping in the water.
Yeah. Particular around Nicola Lake, we've got housing development that has changed the landscape a little bit. So the runoff, every time it rains, it brings a bit of sediment or any kind of material more than it used to before there was any development there.
And that's like people fertilizing their lawns or spraying their lawns or spraying their flowers or whatever, washing their cars.
Weed eaters He added that the highway that passes by the lake contributes contaminants to the water system as well. All the runoff from all the contaminants from whatever vehicle exhaust, rubber, all kinds goes into the system. If there's any accidents along the lake, which there have been a few, any of those contaminants will come into the lake and contribute as well. Holmes confirmed that water testing conducted identified a toxic bloom forming strain of cyanobacteria. Recently, the algae has started to accumulate in kind of a paint-like form. It starts with grass clipping algae. If there's some good algae in there's some good algae in the system, but there's also toxic producing kinds, which we've been seeing more and more of. The bloom has shifted with the wind, initially spreading throughout the lake before being pushed to the north end. Calm days are when it starts to settle, and it'll settle throughout the whole lake, then start to accumulate more into the toxic stuff. Holmes added that boiling water does not neutralize the toxin. In fact, it worsens it. It makes it airborne through the stream.
Steam.
We've even advised to wear N95 masks while taking samples because of the spores.
Imagine. Just sampling it.
Just taking a water sample.
Yeah.
And you've got to wear a mask.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Beyond the risks to humans and pet health, Holmes said the blooms are affecting traditional food systems. We've been advised not to eat fish during the blooms. The toxins accumulate in fish tissue, especially the gills. I've caught fish during sailfish fishing season that were green along their sides.
Oh, can imagine.
It's really impacting our sustenance fishing, kokanee, trout, and burbot. During the lakeside meeting, Perry Metcalf proposed a more structured and technology-driven response. Instead of testing the lake twice a year, have a business case put together for real-time monitoring of the lake that the collective can access aside from the ministry. He added the communication systems for alerts are essential. That's detection and discuss reporting. Is there a mass communication that we can do for reporting the detection we have now? And then can we correct any infiltration problems and prevent any infiltration? The call resonated with many in attendance. Within days of the meeting, concerned residents began formally organizing under a new name, Guardians of Nicola Lake Watershed Society. You know, and that's, I mean, this goes back to the stewardship thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
like taking stewardship of your water bodies and, you know, like I say, the government isn't necessarily going to throw all the money in. So, you know, citizens that want to look after the watershed get together and do what they can on their side to help out. The group hopes to advocate for consistent testing, press for action on existing watershed plans, and engage with all stakeholders, including First Nations, ranchers, residents, and the provincial government. 2017, Upper Nicola Band investigated fish carcasses found along Douglas Lake and the Nicola River. 2024, the band ran a nutrient study that showed the algae was being fed by external inflows, rain events, flooding, possible wildfire debris, rather than internal lake. So everything that's causing this is coming from outside.
Yeah, it's pouring into the lake.
Algae blooms are symptoms of things that have happened in the watershed. There's not much you can do about it now, but let it run its course and stay away from the water. Who wants to stay away from the water, though?
I know.
Other lakes across the province, including Elk Lake, Prior Lake, Mammoth Lake, Mara Lake, and Quamichan Lake, are experiencing the same crisis. The BC government has reported that blooms have become increasingly common in the last decade. And these ones in Algonquin were just before COVID hit. So they're in the same time period.
Correct.
While not all blooms are toxic, some types of cyanobacteria produce cyanotoxins, which can cause serious illness or death in humans, pets, and wildlife when ingested or contacted through skin or inhaled as airborne droplets. According to the BC Ministry of Environment, cyanobacteria, commonly referred to as blue-green algae, are naturally occurring bacteria that thrive in warm, nutrient-rich, slow-moving water. Blooms often appear as blue-green scum or mats on the surface of the water and may look like paint, slime, or grass clippings. Symptoms of exposure can include skin irritation, nausea, diarrhea, and in severe cases, liver damage and respiratory failure. That's like, wow, just from algae. This is not unique to the Nicola Valley, Holmes says, the Okanagan Valley, the Kootenays, the island, because this is just northeast of Vancouver.
Yes. Yeah.
Lots of places are experiencing algae blooms in the last 5 years. It's the human collective. It's climate change. It's all the above. All of us are responsible. So, like you say, it's not just a BC thing. There's stories all, if you Google it, there's stories all across Canada about this right now. Lake Erie, very warm right now, raising concerns about algae blooms. Various lakes in Ontario have seen blooms. A couple lakes of Algonquin, like we said, were closed off to camping due to algae blooms.
So yeah, that's one I was trying to think of earlier. But it's Lake Lavier. So it's Dixon Lake, Lake Lavier, Hardy Bay, and Ryan Lake. Mm-hmm. And so there's reports of them being closed for camping right back until 2014, 2013.
Yeah.
So it's been a problem that long.
Over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So question being, if you're out paddling on a trip somewhere and you're relying on filtered water, if you don't realize there's an algae bloom.
Exactly.
Right?
So you have to
or the start of one.
People are going to have to learn how to start recognizing algae blooms. And so take a freshwater mountain spring or something that pours into whatever toxified lake you're on and filter your water from that stream, because the algae bloom is going to be in the lake. It's going to be affected by heat and sunlight and whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's that cyanobacteria that, you know, it causes that blue green algae. So it's one of those things. This is more of one of those canary in the coal mine things that we kind of, it's like, we're in it now, mm-hmm. type thing, right? This is one of those things that, like they say, climate change is just, got to be careful. I think we're too late to change things for climate change. I think we're in it. I think we have to start, like, we're going to be reacting to it more and more. It's not, hey, let's avoid it. It's going to be, no, we missed the bus on that.
Mm-hmm.
Missed the boat. So I think it's more of a, we have to start reacting to it and coming up with technologies to, you know, carbon capture and, you know, there's
slow it down if we can.
Exactly. And
I don't think we're going to restart.
There are lots of companies out there that do carbon capture and, you know, you do it in a, whatever solid matrix is and yada, yada, yada. You're pulling carbon from the sky, just like, you know, hey, well, isn't that what trees do? Well, yeah, but we're kind of cutting down all the trees.
But there is the regular climate cycles that happen.
We're
not helping. That's for
no,
sure.
No, we are not helping. Yeah. So I agree. There are natural cycles.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we've pushed what nature can compensate for, and you know, like it doesn't. Of course, the natural wildfires, which are particularly bad this year, is not helping much either. But it's a sign of the times. We're gonna have to start really paying attention. We can't take for granted what we used to. We have to learn how to recognize. That if you're paddling through a lake, you have to recognize that maybe the scum on top of the water means you shouldn't be drinking that water.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just pollen from the pine trees.
Like, what is it? 2019, I paddled through Lavier because you can't camp there. But if mm-hmm. you're on the route, you have to pass through it. And I remember seeing that I remember the last time I saw something like this was in the spring when you see the pollen collecting on the water.
Green, yellow.
But this wasn't the pollen. This was the blue green algae, and it was definitely blue green. Mm-hmm. And so we knew not to touch the water, not to drink the water in Lavier as we passed through. But people are gonna have to start recognizing for themselves. It's
like you say, it's sort of the canary in the coal mine, right?
Yeah.
It's the beginning.
And keep an eye on your pets. If you're camping with a dog and you come across one of these blue green algae lakes, do not let the dog swim.
Yeah.
Because you can't control what they're going to consume when they're swimming.
No. The amount of people that we even go up to the leash-free area. There's the river that the salmon go up and spawn.
Yeah.
The amount of people that say our dog rolls in them and eats them.
Mm. Yeah.
I am lucky none of my dogs have ever done that. They want no part of a dead fish.
I used to have beagles and they loved rolling in dead fish. I loved rolling in poop. And the female beagle just loved horse poop. She would like sneak up and then take a bite and run off before you could stop her. It's like, it's horse poop. What are you doing?
No.
She loved it. She just loved horse poop.
Yeah. Nope. But the only thing my last dog liked the cat litter box.
Oh, there you go.
So,
crunchy snacks.
Right? It's the chocolate bar machine. Alrighty. So watch yourself around lakes and rivers that have blue-green algae.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
Google it and take a look at it.
It's part of. It's going to have to start becoming part of your research for a camping trip. It's like, right? Do I have any lakes that are at risk that I'm going to be passing through or wanting to be camping on? Is there forest fires in the areas that I'm planning on heading to? Like, check a day or two ahead of time. So, oh, I might need to change my plans. There's a forest fire forming in that area. It's pushing east or pushing west. You know, you have to be. It's one of these new planning tools. You can't just count on, you know, hey, it's going to be good weather. No, it might be good weather, but you might end up with a forest fire.
Right.
Or a blue-green algae lake.
Blech.
Anyway.
Do you remember when we were talking about lakes and Algonquin? Remember when we were going to Hogan and came across the bear on the porch?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And he was more scared of us than we were of him.
A man has been hospitalized with injuries following a grizzly bear attack near Creston, B.C. B.C. Conservation Services officers later determined the animal's behavior was defensive in nature.
Oh.
So a lot of people, you know, they're out portaging and they're all worried about coming across bears because bears are going to stalk you, bears are going to hunt you, bears are going to eat you, and the BC Conservation Officer Services, BCCOS, said in a social media post that the attack happened around 4:30 p.m. Saturday when a husband and wife were riding e-bikes along Kootenai River near West Creston in southeast BC.
So they were
northeast of Vancouver.
They were fast and quiet, and they came upon a bear, and the bear says, "Whoa, I'm being attacked."
Service said the wife heard her husband scream, saw a grizzly bear running at her. She used bear spray, then realized a second bear was attacking her husband. Wife used bear spray again, and both bears ran off. Emergency services were called. The man was transported to hospital in Cranbrook by ambulance, where he underwent surgery. RCMP say the attack happened in the Creston Valley Wildlife Management Area. Investigators believe the bear are 2 to 3 years old, are known to have been in the area over the last few years. According to the police, the two victims were riding their bikes along the park's dike system near a bat hut when they were attacked.
So, if you switch the story around, these bears are telling their friends, two people on bicycles attacked us.
Right?
So, it... It's all perspective.
It definitely is.
And really, it's you just caused a defensive situation in bears.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like
the preparedness in this case by way of ready access and use of bear spray may prove to have been a life-saving measure, says Crescent RCMP Staff Sergeant Brandon Bulizuk, reminding hikers to be prepared and encounter predators in the wild. A wildlife coexistence coordinator.
Wow, I've never heard of that
before. I've never heard of that title before. In the area said that it's possible the e-bikers came upon the bears too quickly, weren't making enough noise to herald their coming. Sergeant Ben Beetlestone with the BCCOS confirmed the two cyclists encountered the bears on a blind corner in a trail that was thick with bushes. They were very well prepared with the bear spray for the encounter of the bears. And the wife had the foresight to call 911 right away and get an ambulance rolling there. So, yeah, they surprised the bears. The bears went in defensive mode and attacked.
It's good to know that it wasn't a predatory response.
Yes.
It was defensive. So they just, e-bikes can move pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. And they're quiet.
And they're pretty quiet.
Yeah. And if you're just enjoying the day, not talking, not, you know.
Yeah, you're just riding, just enjoying the nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zipping through. The conservation officers swept the area after the attack, didn't locate the bears. They closed 3 major trails in the area, installed signage, and set up traps, but no bears were captured. They said they've determined that the attack was defensive in nature. There was no evidence to suggest the bears had been stalking or hunting people. Said officers interviewed a couple, assessed the attack site, consulted with a regional large carnivore specialist. Due to the defensive nature of the attack, there are no efforts being taken to capture or dispatch the bears at any time, which is the first thing that runs through everybody's mind. Let's get rid of those dangerous bears.
It was the dangerous e-bikers that came up on the bears.
And I think a lot of research that goes on with bears has probably made people start to think, well, realistically,
yeah,
it's not always the bear.
It's right? not always the bear.
Victim underwent surgery and is expected to recover. On a side note, reported human grizzly bear conflicts in BC have gone from 943 in 2019 to 617 in 2024. That's 300 down 300 reports of the conflicts. Creston Mayor Arnold de Boone, a former conservation officer, said that there have been concerted efforts over the last few decades to restore grizzly bears in the Creston Valley. He advises people in the backcountry to be on the lookout for telltale signs of bear activity, like bear scratch marks and overturned rocks. When you're focused on something that you enjoy, you're not always thinking about what the risk factor is. And again, there are probably a lot of people here that aren't aware of the number of grizzlies that do live quietly in our valley, the mayor says. So, you know, when we're out, do you wear bear bells on your packs?
On my portage packs, I put bear bells.
Do you walk down the trail whistling, singing, or calling, hey, bear?
No.
Hey, bear. I know a few people that do the hey, bear thing. Whistling or singing depends on the day.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make more noise if I'm solo. Right, to try to get their attention. Now, I know I've been on making noise on one portage, and I was on a late fall, so like you could see your breath.
Yeah.
And I was making noise, and I came across the portage, and on the ground in the middle of the portage was a steaming pile of bear scat. And it was actually steaming. So I knew he was in the woods watching me.
Yes.
Right, he was that.
He was just there.
He was just there.
And he's like, I was just having a nice poo, and this stupid portager disturbs
my
bathroom break.
Right. So yeah, if you're out there on the portages, whatever, keep an eye on your surroundings. These days, it's easy to blame the animal, like I said, but we are in their homes, and they may not be expecting us.
Yes.
Right. I gotta think, yeah, you know what? People on e-bikes just zipping around a corner. Boom, there's a bear. Yeah. He gets frightened. He thinks he's being attacked. Goes into defensive mode. Also, I know some people who poo-poo the idea of carrying a can of bear spray. But better to be safe than sorry.
Yeah.
And if you have to fend off a bear, you may find yourself wishing you had that can on your hip.
When I lived out in BC, it was something that was more common.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it as, it doesn't happen much here.
I've paddled with a few people that when they saw I had a can, that they're just like, because I had it left for when I go solo.
Yeah.
I don't usually bring it when I'm in a group.
Yeah.
But if I'm solo.
Exactly.
I always have that can. Yeah,
because and I feel the same way. If I'm in a group of people, there's always a lot of chit-chat. There's a lot of chatter. You're talking and huffing and puffing and saying whatever. You're planning out your day. You're discussing stuff on the portage. On the water, who cares? Like, you can be as quiet as you want because you're going to be attacked by a fish. Oh, trout, look out. Anyways, it was a common thing to carry bear spray out in British Columbia, and I think it's because of the factor of the differences between grizzly bears and black bears is pretty significant. And for the most part, if you spook a black bear, most times I'm not an expert, but most times they're going to run from you.
Yep.
And out in BC though. Like it was just common knowledge. It's like, oh, you know, grizzly bears, they aren't afraid of you, right?
No.
You may startle them and you'll cause a defensive posture, but so you have to be a little bit more prepared and cognizant and have bear bells on your packs and make some noise and talk loudly and discuss things loudly and whatever. I don't know. I'm not exactly a fan of, hey, let's play some loud music out of my backpack.
No.
Because that...
When I ran across that bear, that was one of, I think, three times that entire trip that you and I were not together on a portage.
It's true, yeah. You had gone ahead or something, yep.
Yep. I was ahead of you on that one, and I was just in my own thoughts, tumbling along, and then boom, all of a sudden there's a bear, and a bear is sitting there scrunching up some stuff in the creek, looks up, and boom, there's a human.
There's a human in front of me.
And he says, oh no, I hope humans can't climb trees. Because up he went.
Yes, he went up.
you know?
Yeah. But, yeah, so, you know what? Like I say, especially if you're solo, it's better to have that can of bear spray than not. If people want to make fun of you, let them make fun of you.
Clip it your belt, just like most people carry some sort of knife or something on their belt. Mm-hmm. Carry a can of bear spray on the other hip.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're afraid of it, if you are okay with sacrificing yourself to the meal bear to gods. The bear gods, and
oh, so be it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't want to put the fear in. Like, I'm not trying to make people nervous. Like, there's precautions. If you just, the key thing is try not to surprise a bear.
Right?
And it's not just bears. Just try and not be.
Well, that moose, we surprised that moose.
That moose was loping. I remember I was in the lead that time. And I heard a noise, saw it coming at me. I had a canoe on my head. I stepped sideways into the bushes, and what the heck? I think it was an adolescent. Didn't look very old.
It was a moose.
It was definitely a moose. And they run funny. I remember thinking that. I was like,
but you do too.
Guaranteed. But yeah, you just don't want to surprise the animals.
So yeah, when you're going down the portages and whatnot, watch out for moose and bears. Remember, you're on their home turf.
Yes.
So make some noise going down the portages and hopefully you don't spook any of them.
Yeah.
But like I say, it's nice to know that they're now not just automatic thing. Dangerous bear, let's shoot it. And
no, we don't want that. We don't want that.
Yeah, don't want that at all. Paddling Magazine. Inviting the next generation of adventurers to grab a paddle, hit the water, and tell their stories. Newly launched Paddling Kids Story Contest is open to paddlers aged 3 to 17 and aims to celebrate getting outside and exploring from a canoe, kayak, raft, or paddleboard. Sharing your love of paddle sports is no small task, especially when you are sharing it with kids, says Paddling Magazine's Brianna Kelly, a veteran paddling instructor and mom of two. I'm having problems speaking today.
I've noticed that.
Too much stress. I need a holiday, like a 3-week holiday.
There you go.
She's the one that came up with the contest. There is a lot to consider and plan for, but the simplest adventures are sometimes the most rewarding. Whether it's a first trip, a stand-up paddleboard session with friends, or a kayak adventure they'll never forget, Paddling Magazine is looking for real stories from paddling kids who made the most of their summer. I really want to help our community share our passion for paddle sports because it has shaped us into what I consider to be pretty cool humans, says Kelly. One way Paddling Magazine is going to do this is by running a story contest for kids. It's our excuse to interrupt your social scrolling with a reminder to stop what you're doing, go on a paddling adventure with your kids, your friends' kids, or your grandkids. Winners will receive cool prizes, and the grand prize winner will have their story featured in the spring 2026 issue of Paddling Magazine. If you go to paddlingmag.com for more information on the who, what, where, when, hows, and all that sort of thing. Paddlingmag.com. But it sounds like they got, like, I think it's Jackson Kayak in on this and everything. So there should be some pretty cool prizes for sure. So if you got a kid that you're out there paddling with, tell them to write their story down and send it in.
Speaking of Jackson Kayaks, did you make note of the video I shared with you the other day with some Jackson Kayak family members.
Mm-hmm.
The little girl, I don't know, she was like 7, but she's got her combat role in, and she loves surfing, and
On the waves.
It was a pretty cool video. And it's like she had swim goggles on, like snorkel and mask type thing, snorkel but the mask. And so it was like, this is impressive. That little girl was just loving it.
Yeah, there's a couple of times she flipped that she's trying to get
and
back
came
over.
Right back up. Yeah. So it's just one of those things. It's like, they, of course, the Jackson family are going to start their kids young, right?
Right.
So they're going to make kayaks for whitewater kayaks for kids that age, and they're going to make life jackets and safety gear for kids that age. So I thought it was pretty cool that they were getting their kids out so early and getting them integrated into the sport.
Well, this next thing. May. Nah, maybe not. But may. Yeah, it could. Put a damper on people getting out. Start. And once this happens, if it happens, I can pretty much guarantee it's going to ripple right across Canada. I will lay $20 on it. I'll lay $50 on it right now.
I'll take that bet. Because
$50. If this comes to pass, it'll go from Alberta, BC, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Ontario, straight out to the East Coast.
I don't think it'll happen in BC.
I do.
I don't think there's enough in the other prairie provinces to...
Maybe not Saskatchewan. So here we go. Alberta's provincial government made a big splash with water recreation groups when it launched a public survey looking for feedback on a potential new watercraft pass. The annual fee's purpose, the province says, would be to keep invasive mussels like zebra and quagga mussels that can devastate aquatic ecosystems out of Alberta. It would apply to watercrafts like kayaks, canoes, motorboats, and jet skis. Survey will run until August 25th. Kayaks, canoes, motorboats, and jet skis. I'm buying a stand-up paddleboard. Because it's not mentioned in the raft.
Well, because it doesn't hold water.
Yeah. The province said it's interested in hearing from the public about how much the pass should cost and how it should be applied, including whether it should be used on a per boat or per operator basis. But boaters and paddlers around Alberta have raised concerns with the idea, said Alberta Whitewater Association Executive Director Mike Holroyd. So now I know through the states, there are certain states that have this thing where you've got to pay yearly.
And we covered this 2 years ago.
A few years back, yeah.
Wisconsin, Michigan, or something.
Oh, there's a few of them out there.
Yeah.
But you got to pay every year, you got to pay a fee so that you can take you and you get a sticker to put on your boat. And
like, I know a few people who have like 6 or 7 watercraft and they just choose which one to take out. Can you imagine if you had six, like,
look at Kevin Callan, he would be screwed.
I know. It'd be cost a fortune. It's right?
And hence why they're saying is it going to be per boat or per operator?
And honestly, like, so...
And what if there's two people in the canoe?
There you go. Yeah.
Do you have both of them have to have one?
Or just as long as one of them does.
As one has it?
But is also, this is just a money grab scheme by the government?
Right. And that's the first thing everybody says. Yeah. They're just trying to grab money.
Yeah,
right?
What are you trying to do here?
So Holroyd says his group has worked with the province on invasive species prevention in recent years, but their survey took them by surprise. What they're really after is trying to stop the mussels from coming into the province, which is from the east and the south. And instead, they're going with this shotgun approach that's kind of all over the province, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't. It really doesn't.
More engagement with key stakeholders would be better before the public survey, Holroyd says. He added he believes motorboats or sailboats entering Alberta are likely the bigger problem the province faces with invasive mussels. Our boats, recreational small boats, they're in the water for maybe a couple hours and then they're out of the water. It seems unlikely that they're going to spread things more than, say, fishing gear or people playing in the water. Zebra and quagga mussels currently aren't found in Alberta, but in the province's announcement of its new survey, it said there's an increasing risk of these mussels around North America. Zebra mussels alone cause up to $500 million annually in damages to power plants, water systems, and industrial water intakes into the Great Lakes region, says the Office of the Minister of Environment and Protected Areas. No decision has been made on the next steps. We look forward to hearing Albertans' thoughts before determining how to move forward. Revenue from the potential watercraft pass would fund prevention, monitoring, and education efforts, including inspection stations and mussel-sniffing dog teams.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. If the new pass is implemented, Holroyd says he'd like to see some of the revenue it generates go towards improving access to Alberta's lakes and rivers. Earlier this year, Alberta implemented mandatory watercraft inspections for every boat entering the province from its eastern to southern borders, which we talked about. They were talking about doing that. I know they were doing that through, like, going into Banff and stuff like that.
Yes.
You had to have your boat, if out of province, could not have been in water for, was it 7 days?
I don't know. It had to have dried.
Yeah, and had to have been out of the water for like a week or something like that before you could put it into an Alberta lake.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, if you're coming from Ontario, I mean, there's a few days, but...
Yeah, and so...
That kind of...
But as you're describing, they have something in place already.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're going to do it for people who are, you know, circulating within the province?
Well, in 2024, 15 watercrafts were confirmed positive for invasive mussels in Alberta. So people coming in. The cost of the annual pass could place greater strain on local businesses, which in turn would drive up the price of lessons and equipment rentals, says Rocky Mountain Paddling Center owner Mark Taylor. He said the added cost would make the sport less accessible.
I never thought of that. Imagine you've got 150 canoes, your rental agency, and...
If it's per canoe basis.
Can you imagine? Like, these boats never leave this body of water. You want me to register each and every one of them?
Right.
Hmm.
And this is why what I was saying earlier. This may cause a decrease in people getting out there.
Yeah.
Because now, all of a sudden, you got to, you know,
it's
somebody
says, $30 a day. Now it's $60 a day.
Yeah. It's like a blank check for the province. It seems like another money grab, says Taylor. We already pay to access provincial parks. Now we already pay to go into the backcountry. Paddling was supposed to be a free sport once you bought all the equipment, and now it's turning into another expensive thing that makes it harder for people to access.
Hmm.
So, okay, I went and bought my $3,000 canoe and my paddles. And
that's a cheap canoe.
I was being nice. Yeah. Yeah. my life jackets for me and my family, my safety kit, my
packs and my
roof racks and all that sort of stuff so that we can get out there and paddle. You know, call it $5,000 at the end of the day, and now we got to buy a pass every year for $50 or whatever it's going to be. Yeah. Cuz you know it's not going to be $10.
No, it's not going to be cheap.
So it's just like, really, why do I need to spend another $50?
For province, it's like passive income.
Oh, while the province mandates boats entering Alberta to stop at an inspection station, Taylor said the stations aren't open 24 hours per day and aren't always located close enough to the provincial borders.
Oh, so that's a problem there. They could fix that.
Setting up inspection stations so boats entering the province must immediately be cleaned to ensure they're not bringing mussels in would better serve Alberta, Taylor suggested, adding that a fee hitting boats traveling within the province misses the mark.
100%.
I fully agree with that. Like, hit the boats coming in, because if the mussels aren't there, then your boat's not taking the invisible mussels to another lake.
If you're a rental company, if you're like Opiongo Outfitters or Algonquin Outfitters or whatever, your boats stay within the park. Your boats stay within an area.
Mm-hmm.
And so the risk is not there. But grab the people that are coming in out of province. Grab the people that are crossing borders.
Yep.
Those are the people that potentially could be bringing invasive species into the waterways of your province.
When we went across the country... when we drove a few years back, we hit different paddle spots all across the country. And if there was a, like going into Alberta, if there was a boat washing, you must stop here and wash, I'd have no problems doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's my $10. Wash my boat just to make sure there's nothing there and doodly doop on my way.
Yeah. Bleach me down, clean me up. And yeah, exactly.
But yeah, if there's, like you say, if there's an outfitter there and they know there's nothing in that lake, why are you dinging him and his 15, 20, 30, whatever canoes and kayaks?
Well, you ever pass by like an Opiongo or a Algonquin Outfitters?
Right.
They've got, like, they
got tons of boats.
Dozens.
Yeah. So, fish swim, water moves, but the mussels and things like that, the invasive species, as it were, if they're not here, then there isn't a risk of transporting them from place to place.
Yeah.
If they're not here, I can't transport invisible mussels to another lake.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I'll guarantee you right now, if Alberta says, yep, we're putting this in place, you got to buy a pass every year,
mm-hmm.
Ontario will do it. Any big paddling places will do it.
So I don't think British Columbia will do it.
You don't think so?
No, they're more of a granola crunching tree, hugging, sandal wearing. I think
kayak paddling.
Yeah, they're
whale swimming, petting.
And a lot of people, they paddle ocean water anyways. So I don't know that they would.
Yeah, but they're still within the province limits. They're not beyond international waters.
Yeah, and they are exposed to ocean, which is mussel territory. And
see, that's why I would think they would probably do it. Once it starts, it rolls downhill. Yeah.
And, you know, once a government gets a taste of that passive income of the people registering their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Wait a minute. Alberta made $100 million doing that?
Yeah.
Well, we got 16 times as many people as them.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
And don't forget, we got Dougie Ford here, too, so.
Well, he just made it free for registering your vehicles and made it free to travel the toll highways. And I don't know, he's kind of opposite of that monster, but he might be looking for passive income to replace the registration of your vehicle license plates.
Which was dumb to begin with, but I'm not going to get into that.
He's buying votes.
How's that dollar of beer going?
I know. Where's my dollar beer?
Nobody can afford to sell you a dollar beer.
No, they can't.
Morons.
You can't regulate the price, people. You can tell them how you. Anyways,
Let's not get on this.
You will sell beer for a dollar. I can't afford to do that.
Right? No more beer. I got one last thing, and it's purely a fun thing. Do you remember the PS6 or the PS5 or whatever it was?
Yes.
PlayStation. Remember it came out with the virtual reality kayaking?
We talked about this, six, 8 months ago?
I think.
Yeah.
And it came out. And
last fall.
You can put those virtual headset
on. Yeah, so you're in a 3D...
On. Yeah, and go kayaking. Yeah. And remember I said it would be cool if it was like a player versus player option, on Call of Duty or something like that, where you can be paddling
drown
up with
your
buddy, smack him with your paddle, tip him, you know, force him to be eaten by alligators or something like that,
exactly.
Right? So, paddle, a rage-inducing party game, the most frustratingly fun co-op game of 2025. It's for your computer on a thing called Steam. Zorro Arts and Assemble Entertainment are thrilled to announce that paddle, the hilariously brutal co-op chaos game, is now live on stream. The premise is annoyingly simple. All you need to do is press one button to row your boat safely. So why are you screaming at your computer as you perish in a pool of lava for the 15th time? Because that's paddle. Achingly simple and frustratingly hard with every stroke, paddle will test your coordination and friendships as you attempt parkour in a rubber dinghy with your only goal being to get to the end without drowning. Simple, right? One poorly timed jump or maneuver and you will find yourself in the drink. So there's some features. Physics-based paddling. Flail, flip, and occasionally paddle like a pro. Just don't question the laws of physics too hard. High frustration mode. Designed to break your spirit and your keyboard, rage quitting is actively encouraged. Local and online co-op. Team up or tear apart friendships across the globe.
Across the globe. There you go.
Speed run timer for masochists, leaderboard climbers, and those who enjoy pain with precision. One colossal handcrafted level. Optional checkpoints can be switched on if you're losing the will to carry on. Merciful settings. Tweak controls, toggle checkpoints, or just sit in the menu and scream into the void.
They make it sound so fun.
Simply put, we've never had so much fun paddling towards certain doom. Grab your friends, your family, your enemies, your Uber driver, your dog, anyone you can trust to mash buttons and not strangle you when you drown. Yet again.
That sounds fun.
That sounds like a good game. So I guess you can team up in a rubber dinghy and try to paddle down somewhere. Like the one I saw, there's lava on both sides of a river.
Yeah.
So you got to stay within the river. And I guess things pop up or currents change and you got to stay. Next thing you know, you're burning to death in the lava. So if you're into paddling games and you're on Steam, check out Paddle, Paddle, Paddle.
Cool. I'm going to have to check that out.
Right? Not me. I still think they need to put a multiplayer combat function on the PlayStation kayak.
You should be able to shoot people.
Right? If people are paddling and you're getting in your way, you should be able to pull a gun out of the hatch. And
they look like they're having way too much fun. Let's spoil the day.
Well, wait a minute. How did he get a harpoon?
Who's shooting mortars?
Right? A kayak mounted mortar right from the front.
Yeah.
Little 50 cal something on the front of your boat.
Pop, 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 pop.
Missile launcher, grenade launchers. See, that's the kind of Call of Duty kayak.
If I mount this 50 cal on the back of my kayak, it's like thrust. It's like an engine. Just don't stand behind me.
I'm shooting the people behind me while being shot forward at the same time. This is awesome. Well, that's all I got this week. You got anything else?
No, nothing. Just encourage people to enjoy the dying tree in Kilbear and encourage the 30 new little treelings that are like ants growing in the forest.
Little ants.
They're taking the hobbits to Isengard.
Yes, enjoy the trees. That's pretty cool that they're actually, like I say, saving that one tree in the way of making
genetically
30 others. But still, it's not the same tree. If you're going to go, unless, of course, they can grow one that grows and looks exactly the same windswept look.
Well, that you would need
to train it. You need a bonsai trainer for that.
Exactly.
One.
You need somebody who knows how to,
manipulate the tree.
Encourage a bonsai tree to grow a certain way.
Just have it start growing and just have a fan on it constantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was in Australia. There's this one tree for like 50-100 kilometers in any direction. This one tree, and it was a well-known tree. And then some drunk driver ran into it in the middle of nowhere and killed the tree.
Wasn't there one in England that's been there for like hundreds of years, and somebody cut it down?
Yes. And that was just purely malicious. They didn't like the people enjoyed the tree. It was made famous by movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then somebody went and cut it down.
Yeah. Hey, let's cut that down.
What a wiener.
People enjoy this too much. Yeah. Let's cut it down.
Yeah. Way to go, Karen.
It wasn't even on private property. It was on a public land.
Unbelievable. Anyway, you're going camping.
Hiking camping. Yeah. It's a new thing for me and the kids. And the wife.
Hot diggity.
Mm-hmm. So we're taking it easy. We're just doing a little quick in and out through Western Uplands in Algonquin. And we're doing short days because we want the kids to enjoy it, not hate it right off the bat. I know Stella will like it, but Beckett's not too, he's not too excited about hiking. So we'll make it fun and easy.
You know what would make it fun?
What?
If the hike was like a portage. And you had the canoe with you. Or you could just tell them it's portage training.
Well, see, the original plan was that we would find campsites, me and Beckett would paddle to the campsites, and Siobhan and Stella would hike to the campsites.
So with minimal gear?
With minimal gear, and I carry most of it. And then we would meet up each afternoon. They would hike there, and I would have paddled there. But we couldn't find the right campsites. Couldn't guarantee you'd get them because you can't book individual campsites. So it was better if we all hiked.
Well, you'll have a good time anyway.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah.
You're going to come out there. You're going to enjoy it, whether I have to drag you by the feet.
You're going to enjoy this, whether you like it or not.
Right. All righty. Well, have a good time, man.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Amazon Music, or all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.